Hey, and welcome to Philip Dialogues. This is the place where we dive into the minds of entrepreneurs, creators, publishers, and innovative thinkers. Whether you're starting a business, exploring field marketing, or wanting to take to the next level, join me as we explore digital insights and tactics shaping the future together. Today, I'm honored to welcome a true innovator, thought leader, and digital strategist, Dr. Gigi Zhat. Gigi is the CEO and co-founder of Ibo.ai, a company at the forefront of AI-driven automation in the healthcare and fintech sectors. With a background that spans law, entrepreneurship, and technology, Gigi bridges the worlds of digital transformation and human connection. He's also a TEDx speaker, an author, a board member of multiple organizations. Gigi is not just building business, he's shaping the future. Welcome to the show. It's a real pleasure to have you here today. How are you, Gigi?
Hi, Hannah. I'm great. Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
Great to have you joining today's episode. For the beginning, I'm always having some quick questions and just dive in and we get to know you a little bit better. First question is strategy or execution?
I'd say execution. Strategy must ignite the vision, yes. But ultimately, it's execution that is the hard part that delivers the impact.
Good answer. AI ethics or AI efficiency?
I'd say AI ethics, because ethics must shape efficiency, right? Without ethics, all the speed of efficiency becomes just recklessness.
Okay, so they definitely, it relies on each other. For sure. The third question is morning run or a late night brainstorm?
Oh, certainly a morning run. I think there is clarity in early morning running. There's clarity in motion and there are ideas which come with oxygen. So for sure, morning run.
Morning run. That was clear. All right. Thank you so much. Now let's dive into your journey, which, we can tell you had a really fascinating career, or you're having a fascinating career, from founding tech companies to advising governments and academic institutions. What first sparked your passion for digital innovation?
I think, Hannah, it really came with the intersection of two worlds, the world of communication and the world of computation. So as a child, I think I was always curious about sort of how do systems work, whether they are linguistic systems or legal systems or technical systems. So later, I trained as a lawyer. My doctoral degree is in law, but even there, I found myself drawn out to patterns of, let's say, logic, argumentation structures. I was very interested in how information flows, even in the public sector. So it wasn't long, I think, before I realized that technology was really becoming the new language of our time. So digital innovation to me is really about kind of redesigning how humans engage. So how do we engage with each other? How do we engage with services provided by the state or private entities? And how do we engage with meaning? How do we understand meaning? So I think that's what pulled me into areas such as healthcare, into areas in artificial intelligence. And it eventually led me to found companies like Ibo, because I was never really drawn by the technology itself, technology for its own sake. Yeah. I think I was always drawn into this idea that we could really rethink the user experience at scale. You know, how do 60 million patients interact with a healthcare system? How can we reduce the friction in the funnel of delivering public services across Europe? How could we give patients more dignity? You know, how can we rehumanize what it means to do work? So I think at my very core, my journey is really about finding flaws in a system and building a better one. Maybe that's what the law is all about. That's what legal training is all about. I think it's still what drives me today. So it's not code for code's sake, but it's really building systems that can serve people better, right? So whether it's advising governments or working with national healthcare services, it's always about this one thing. How can we use digital technology to amplify the human potential?
Wow, that's really inspiring. I really appreciate how you didn't see everything as like black and white and more like to find the the holes and try to fill it and give new ideas and connect everything together. That's really nice. Thank you so much. All right, I also want to talk with you about a little bit more about industry trends and also as we already talked a bit about personalization and domain training. So first, let's have a look at like that you've worked a lot on user engagement and B2B profiling. How crucial would you say is personalization in customer acquisition today? And also, where do you see the biggest gaps or like untapped opportunities? As we said, as we already know that you already saw a lot of gaps. But how's your mindset about this?
Yeah, that's a really good question, Hannah. And it's a key point because today, I think personalization through technology isn't anymore a luxury. It is the price of entry into the market. So we have moved away in today's world from these generic funnels, right? And we've moved towards very tailored and personalized journeys. So whether it is B2C or even B2B, right? Users are going to expect relevance from the very first interaction. So yes, in B2B, you still have profiling, you still have personalization. I would say perhaps in B2B, it's even more critical, right, that we personalize funnels and actions because in B2B journeys, we're usually dealing with very long decision cycles and we're dealing with multiple stakeholders. So those businesses running B2B activities that understand personalization are the ones who will be successful tomorrow. And you asked about the gap. No, you asked about what's the biggest gap. And this is it, right? I think the biggest gap is actionability. So what I mean by that is this, Hannah, we've become, I think, really great at collecting data. We've got systems today that capture every click, every movement, every scroll, every eyeball activity. But we are very poor in translating that data into real-time, relevant action. And so personalization is never about data collection. Personalization is always about actioning that data in real-time events, in those micro moments with end users, right? So many companies gather insights, but they fail to deploy those insights in the right moment to nudge a decision, right? Or propose the next best action in a funnel, or maybe to deliver the right content in the context of that user, of that moment, of that specific journey, of that specific task. So there is huge untapped value in sort of this intent-based personalization. So it's not only who you are as an end user, but what are you trying to do right now? And I think this is the big opportunity. This is the big gap. It's the shift from identity to intent, from who you are to what are you trying to achieve in this moment on this site or on this app or in this particular analog service. Like that is the where the frontier lies. I think that is where our focus needs to be. And we could see even in academia, we've got a whole segment which is focused on this, which is called behavioral science, right? It's trying to move from merely data collection about your demographic identity to your intent and to nudge your behavior towards a particular outcome.
That's really mind-blowing because I feel like it's really more people more and more depend on just getting all the data, and also there's a lot lack of trust, you know, from people, and they think, okay, it's just about getting all the information, but not like really seeing or like focusing on the outcome. So,
Agreed. I think we need to make the data actionable, but to your comment, Hannah, about trust, I think there is two very sort of key concepts that we need to think about. I think the first concept is consent, and the second concept is explainability. So firstly, we need to make sure that our end users are consenting to the data collection activities, to the purpose for which that data is going to be processed, and the outcome which it will generate. I fear that many organizations still ignore the proper and clear consent mechanism. I think the second concept for us to speak about in this is this concept of explainability or interpretability, is that when we are closing this gap between data collection and actionability, and the AI tool is dictating a certain outcome, a certain decision, a certain recommendation, we need to ensure that our AI tools are explainable, they are interpretable. So if an end user would ask, okay, but why did I receive this recommendation? I don't know, why was I denied this bank loan, or why was I given this free spin in an iGaming environment? Then we need to make sure that the AI can explain the reasoning that led to that outcome. And it needs to be interpretable. In other words, that the steps which led to the outcome could be understood by an average human with average intellect. And I think that's becoming increasingly hard. And we're seeing a lot of AI scientists which are working specifically on this domain, not how we make AI better from a computational perspective, but how do we make it explainable? How do we make it interpretable? How can humans remain in the loop of what is going on?
Thank you for the explanation. Really interesting. Like, if we look at the bigger picture, do you, or like, what other main trends do you see shaping how companies use like digital tools to grow, to engage customers, and to build affiliate partnerships today?
I think there are probably three trends, Hannah, that are really sort of rewriting the playbook of today. I would say these trends are automation, prediction, and maybe we'll focus a little bit on trust, which you just brought up. So let's start by unpacking these three ideas. So let's talk about automation first. So I think we are now at the stage of a trend where we are not merely using AI to digitize certain tasks. I think now we're at the stage where the trend is to use AI to automate the entire customer journey. So, for example, think of conversational AI that is nurturing a lead, that is then handling the objections that come from that lead, and then is qualifying the intent of that lead autonomously to move to a particular action. Right. And I think that automation of the entire journey is what is going to be making companies, whether in gaming or other segments, far more efficient and far more accurate. And this ties a little bit to the second trend, which is this concept of prediction. Right. So the companies that are winning today are not those companies which are merely reacting, you know, reacting to historical data, but those organizations that are being proactive, that are focusing on prediction. So they are using artificial intelligence to anticipate what the customers want and need even before the customers themselves know it, right? So it's really about the relevance of a company, of a government, of a public sector entity, but at scale, at speed. And trend number one, automation, and trend number two, prediction, they are related because if we are automating the entire customer journey, right? So I mentioned the idea of lead nurturing and then objection handling and then qualifying of the intent. What's the next step? Well, the next step is indeed prediction. It's being able to, in real time, predict whether that customer will stay loyal or whether that customer is at risk of being lost, perhaps going to another bank or going to another gaming company. So prediction, so the mathematical capability to forecast what is next, is the end of the cycle of automation and the second important trend that is rewriting the playbook. The third trend, I think, that we should look at is trust. So you brought this up, Hannah, in your question, but I kind of feel that we're really living in this era, in this age of synthetic content, data fatigue, misinformation, and disinformation. So trust becomes the new currency. It's almost like those brands that are transparent with their data. They're telling you and asking your consent for the use of that data. Those brands that are aligned to, let's say, ethical frameworks, right? Concepts in ethics like openness or fairness or explainability, which we mentioned earlier, those brands that are respectful of the context of the user, those are the brands that will win. So what does it mean to be respectful of the user? So, for example, a lot of the work which we do at Ebo in healthcare actually starts off with a digital literacy assessment. So we use AI to understand the digital maturity or the digital literacy of the end user we're speaking to. So it's not like one journey for everybody. So you might have, for example, a 50-year-old man who's presenting to a game, a company, or a government, but whose literacy age, the ability to read and understand cognitively, is of a 10-year-old. It's very common, right? So you can't present a 50-year-old with the same language, detail, and explanation as you would to a person with a higher level of maturity. So being respectful of the end user is using technology to understand the context of the end user's mindset and capability and adapt the journey to that particular user. So every journey is personalized, every journey is different, every journey is respectful. And here you'll see, Hannah, there is a tie between respect and legal outcomes. Why? Because at law, when we ask for consent, it must be in a way that you understand, that you can interpret what is being asked of you. You could measure it in your head and say, yes, here's my consent. If we present in a context that is too complex for an end user because we do not dynamically assess their level of maturity and capability, then the consent we are getting from them at law is not even well formed, right? Because it is not aligned to the level of maturity. That is how those brands that are respectful of user context will lead. So I think affiliate models are evolving too, or they must evolve. They need to move from purely transactional to relational, because the relational capability between the brand and the end user, that's where the value is. So it's no longer about, I don't know, link sharing. It's all about co-creating value, value between the end user and the enterprise. So I think we'll be seeing more smart partnerships, shared data models, joint personalization, for example, between insurance companies and healthcare companies, previously separate, now they will come together and they will define the next wave. So, in short, Hannah, the tools are here, but the winners will be those who align the tools with purpose, not just performance.
Thank you for taking us on this very interesting journey about main trends and also giving us a sneak peek about the winners. And yeah, this is also my next topic because you already mentioned a bit how you work at Ibu and what is also the purpose. And since you're like leading a whole diverse team at Ibu, you're scaling internationally and innovating constantly. How do you approach building a culture that's both innovative and structured at Ibu?
So the two concepts of innovation and structure are not in conflict, right? So innovation without structure is chaos, right? But then too much structure without the excitement of innovation is going to lead to stagnation. So at Ibo, I think we've built this culture around technology, which is intentional, right? So we give our people the permission to experiment, right? But we also create organizational frameworks to make sure that we are measuring performance, that the organization is adapting over time because there are new challenges constantly, and that when we identify a technology or a process that works, we try to scale it as quickly as possible. So I think probably the main thing I learned from this journey at Ibo is that it's really been key for us to sort of institutionalize curiosity, like to make curiosity the really central value of the company. So I think we do that by making sure that we create these feedback loop mechanisms. There are clear performance indicators, that our rhythm of delivery is allowing a sort of a safe space for excitement, innovation, and creativity. So innovation, Hannah, becomes sustainable not when it's sort of a side project, the thing which you do every now and then, but when it becomes embedded in how you work as a company. And yeah, I agree. I mean, your question sort of touched on this idea of cross-functional teamwork. I think if there's one thing I learned now in Malta is that there is a terrible tendency to silo AI, to kind of say, yeah, that's the responsibility of the IT unit, or yeah, that's the techie bit. No, right? So AI doesn't work in silos, nor can we, right? So if you want to launch AI at scale, and that's exactly what we do within Ibo, you need all the horizontal team to participate. So yes, you need the techies, but yes, you need your design team. Yes, you need your legal team to think about consent. Yes, you need domain experts, let's say language experts or quality assurance experts. We also have an independent team which focuses on the philosophy and the ethics of AI to always keep us in check. So a successful AI solution isn't just accurate, right? It's useful, it's usable, it's safe. So you're right in asking about cross-functional teams because cross-functional teams create alignment, not just between the skill sets that we have within Ibo, but between perspectives, because people who come from different teams come from different backgrounds. They come from different lived experiences. They come from different cultures. That's the role of AI. It needs to bring in all these perspectives, all these cultures, all these tensions into the solution. So it's really in this tension that you get between, let's say, the data scientist and the user experience designer, right? Between the clinician that is focusing on AI safety and the coder, which is focusing on, let's say, AI routine. So the real innovation emerges from that tension. So some tension is really good.
I feel like it's really important to always keep that in mind that also people are so different. And yeah, I was laughing when you were saying also with like that AI is just about people think, okay, it's just for the techies. Because I think that what it used to be, I think a few years ago, because I remember when ChatGPT started to build up and stuff, I was always like, nah, like I'm not gonna touch this, like AI, not for me, you know, who am I to use this? But I think as soon as we are more aware of it and like to see it's also our own responsibility to integrate it and how to use it, it's really like, yeah, mind blowing or like changing. Yeah.
I agree. I think one of the most interesting AI roles of the future, Hannah, will be those people who are not techies, but could translate the technology of AI to the needs of a business, right? You don't need to be a business analyst, you don't need to be a coder, but that role in between, which understands the needs of business and the needs of technology, that's going to be an important role in the future.
I agree, I agree. All right, Gigi. The next point I wanted to talk with you about is community and human connection, because you're also involved in Humanity 2.0, Mittler, and have worked with faith-based and governmental institutions. What would you say is the importance of community and interdisciplinary collaboration in solving digital age challenges?
So MITLA is the Malta IT Law Association. It's kind of a quasi-academic institution which studies where law and technology meet. Whilst Humanity 2.0, which was set up by the Vatican in Rome, in the Vatican, is a coming together of philosophers, technologists, scientists to try and identify the biggest pain points, if you wish, or inhibitors or blockers to human flourishing, you know, to becoming a better race, humans, and how to remove those blockers, sometimes through technology, but sometimes not through technology, but other ways. So I think in all of these organizations, you know, MITLA and Humanity 2.0 that you mentioned, I think the biggest problem of our time, and there are a number, but at least the ones which are focused on mostly, is this concept of alignment. So the alignment problem indicates that we are sort of living in this world where we have lost the alignment between humanity and government. You know, what is government for? Is it really helping humanity move forward, or is it creating more impediments? What is AI for? Are we aligning humanity to AI, or vice versa? Is AI being aligned to humanity? Are we using AI for the right reasons, for social good, for flourishing, or are we using it for warfare? And similar concepts, think of privacy. Is humanity aligned to the value of privacy, like data privacy, or are we living in a world which is full of misinformation, lack of consent, whereby maybe AI even uses data without the consent of the end user to create outputs or predictions? So I think these are philosophical, legal, and also deeply human problems. And I like to work in community, particularly because it gets us to look at these type of challenges. And this is why I think interdisciplinary convergence is important. You know, we spoke about earlier when we're talking about AI not being siloed but horizontal. It's the same thing when you're dealing with large problems in humanity. You know, you need to get, I don't know, theologians and maybe priests to sit with engineers. You need philosophers to speak to regulators. You need philosophers to also speak to software developers. And when that tension occurs, something beautiful happens, Hannah, because we move from technology as a utility to technology as a means to give us purpose. And I think that's really the scope of why we have technology, not technology for its own sake, but technology as a means to a goal. And the goal is always human flourishing.
That's a good perspective. I wanted to talk a little bit about the future outlook and also maybe your final thoughts about it. As you already, I think humanity is a good point to connect this. Would you say, or do you see the next big opportunity for AI, especially in industries driven by user interaction and personalization? Like, where do you see it? And also, what advice would you give to young entrepreneurs who want to build technology that, that lasts?
Let's split these two questions. Let's look at sort of the AI evolution first and then the young entrepreneurs second. So I would say probably, Hannah, that by 2030, so in 5 years' time, AI will not simply be that thing which responds to you and maybe performs actions for you. That's actionable AI. But I think AI will understand you more deeply than we presently imagine it can, right? So I think the next frontier, you know, the next big step is going to be contextual AI. So systems that don't just, you know, personalize content in a journey, which is what you spoke about at the beginning, but they adapt deeply to your emotional state that can resonate with your intent and your circumstance in real time. So I think companies need to think beyond recommendations or recommendation engines. I think companies need to think about relationships. So I think in healthcare or in education or in retail, it means having AI that is creating interactions that matter. So evolving from being a tool, let's say a tool to book an appointment or a tool to get your blood data or a tool in a gaming environment to check the odds, but it becomes not a tool but a companion. Right. So I see that there will be more speech interfaces to make it more human-like. I see that there will be more behavioral prediction. So we're not simply predicting now, you know, if you are likely to deposit in the next week or withdraw, but we are predicting what your behavior towards the entire environment is going to look like. So we will be better in AI at emotional sensing, right? And that will help us redefine once again user engagement. So perhaps just to conclude that question, I'd say probably our opportunity here is more than automation. I think the opportunity is about understanding, right? That's where the value and the trust will be created. So the second part of your question is just sort of, you know, what advice should young entrepreneurs like focus on? I think probably I'd say two things. Maybe the first is solve real problems for real people at a real scale, right? So it's tempting, especially at the moment, Hannah, to chase hype, you know, but longevity and success comes often from clarity of purpose. So my advice would be find a tension, find a human problem that matters to you and use technology to relieve it. So don't just ask, what can I build using technology? I think you need to ask something a bit deeper. So what kind of future am I even building it for, right? Because the most powerful technology, Hannah, is not the one that performs best. It's the one that makes us better. And that is what building technology for good is all about.
So find your purpose or find what really matters for you in life and then see how you can develop this or how you can use technology to make it accessible or like easier. But don't like focus on the outcome, like more focus on where the start is from inside of you. Is that what you mean?
That's it. Be in love with the problem and not the solution.
And I think if we really not only listen to this advice and really like live this advice and do this, then I think there would be, really nice, more like helpful or like an even more engaging or community or like we have better outcomes and not only driven by the performance. Gigi, thank you so much for this insightful conversation. I really enjoyed it. I really enjoy how you, how you explain and also how you start approach to everything in your life. It's really inspiring. and I can take a lot from it. And yeah, thank you so much. If you have one last advice, feel free to wrap it up.
Thank you, Hannah, for having me on this podcast. It was a great pleasure. Perhaps if your listeners are interested in learning more, I hold a blog on www.jjgut.com, and I try to post one idea every 3 to 4 weeks. So you're more than free to and welcome to join me there and continue the conversation.
Thank you so much, and enjoy the rest of your day, and see you soon.
And thank you, Hannah.